Chapter 11. The Minotaur. There are times when Hermes' role as the messenger god weighs on him. Declarations of war have left his lips. The words he's carried have ended whole countries and damned villages to a slow, painful death. The secrets he carries tear at him. The horrors he's had to face, only so he could later tell of them. The warnings he repeats that are ignored, and all he's witnessed is for nothing, since it happens all over again in front of him. There are times the news he brings tears at him, eats his soul like necrosis. The death of Kori, Poseidon destroying another seaside village, every whisper of Pandora, informing Ares of yet another war. This isn't one of those times. Aphrodite's lovely face is slack with surprise. At her side, Hephaestus rubs his chin and says,
"That seems physically improbable."
"How did she manage not to die?" Aphrodite demands, then says, "Wait, don't tell me. I don't want to know." Hermes grins and doesn't bother to hide the complete delight he's taking in this. "But my lady, it is my sacred duty to tell you these things. When Queen Pasiphae ensnared Daedalus's help to be mounted by the bull, she gives him a cross look and is gone in a powerful gust of wind, and he has to grab onto the volcano wall to keep from falling over."
"That wasn't very nice," Hephaestus says, offhand. It's clear he's still thinking of the mechanics of a human-bull hybrid.
"I've been accused of being many things," Hermes says cheerfully. "Nice is not among them."
Artemis lounges in her tent with one of her huntresses' face between her thighs, inexperienced but eager. And she does so love taking on new women.
"Sister," Apollo shouts, appearing at her side and glaring down at her. "Have you lost your mind?"
Her huntress startles and freezes, unsure whether to leave or continue. Artemis rolls her hips up, but the girl ignores the appearance of the sun god and continues with her task.
"Not that I know of,"
she says, tilting her head up so she can look at her brother without altering her position.
"Why do you ask?"
"Poseidon cursed a mortal queen to fall in love with a bull, and she gave birth to a bull-headed monster today."
He crosses his arms and glares. She swallows the laugh that bubbles up, but she must not be entirely successful because he starts tapping his foot.
"Well, isn't that interesting? I'm not sure what that has to do with me."
"Sister dear, Artemis, patron goddess of childbirth," he says with syrup-thick sweetness. "Why on earth did you bless that child? There's no way it could have been born without your help. It had to have been you."
Her huntress pauses again, and Artemis will answer her questions later. She squeezes her thighs about her ears, and the girl resumes.
"Oh, come on. Don't give me that look. This is hysterical. People are going to be talking about this for years."
He considers this for a long moment, then uncrosses his arms.
"Okay, maybe you have a point."
"I know. Now, if you don't mind, I'm a little busy."
She gestures to the huntress between her legs. Apollo snorts.
"Get a few more girls in here, and maybe I'll consider that busy."
He slips away, but Artemis's eyes narrow. "That sounds like a challenge." The girl replaces her mouth with a hand and asks,
"Should I gather the other huntresses, Lady Goddess?"
"I like you," Artemis says, and the girl laughs, cheeks flushed and lips shiny.
Hermes appears in the middle of the garden of Hades' palace and blinks twice. The queen of the underworld is half-naked and on top of Amphitrite, and several things fall into place at once.
Is this why you don't get upset with Hades for his affair with Hecate?
There is no affair with Hecate. You're just an indiscriminate gossip, Persephone retorts. And if they were having an affair, I wouldn't have a problem with it, and it wouldn't have anything to do with Amphitrite.
Oh, he says. He feels rather derailed from his original point.
I came here to...
If this is about the Minotaur, we already know about it, she says. You can go now.
They've already heard about it? From who?
This is the best news in centuries, and this person is ruining it.
Aphrodite, Amphitrite says. She's cross with you.
Oh, this is war.
Ares feels a shiver go down his spine and looks across the battlefield. People are dying around him, but people are always dying around him. He doesn't see anything particularly horrendous, so he doesn't know who could have invoked him so powerfully that he felt it. A young woman who had shared the last piece of sweetbread with him last night gets a spear shoved straight through her chest, and Ares decides he has more important things to worry about. Athena is halfway through a tapestry that is going to hang in Hestia's rooms when Aphrodite appears next to her and says cheerfully, "Guess what Poseidon did?" Normally, Athena would fling anyone who dared to disturb her to the depths of Tartarus, but she's always willing to talk of Poseidon's misdeeds. I'm listening. Hermes appears on her other side, glaring.
You trollop!
He made a queen fall in love with a bull, and she just had the kid. It's got a bull head. Her sister's smile is positively vicious.
I'll make you suffer,
Hermes hisses, and slips away. Aphrodite follows, the sound of her laughter echoing in the room. Athena blinks, looking back to her loom, but is unable to concentrate. Even she hadn't seen that coming. Hera does not get involved. She does not have opinions. As a rule, if it doesn't concern her, then it doesn't concern her. She waits for her husband to leave and tries not to worry about his mutterings about bulls, the queen mother Europa, and how Pasiphae had the right idea of it. She steps into the throne room, and the fire burns cheerfully and bright in the center of it. She sits beside it, and no sooner has she done so than Hestia appears at her side.
You heard then?
Hermes told me. She rubs at her temples.
Aphrodite got to me first, Hestia says, and the goddess of the hearth seems entirely too cheerful. I can say, of all the misdeeds Poseidon has wrought, this one is certainly unique.
She slumps and buries her face in her hands.
This whole family is mad, and we're doomed to only become worse.
Hestia laughs and puts an arm around her shoulder.
Come now, I think Hades is quite reasonable.
Hera shifts only so that she can glare.
Hades chose to rule the dead and marry Kori. He's the maddest of all of us.
Hestia can't refute that, so she starts finger-combing Hera's long, curly hair. Hera slumps back into her hands, and Hestia's smile is soft as they sit there in silence. The only noise that of the crackling fire. When Hephaestus returns to the volcano, it's to his wife sitting in his throne with her arms crossed.
What did you do? She asks.
I just gave him a little suggestion, is all,
he says, and scoops Aphrodite into his arms so that he may reclaim his throne. She snuggles into his side, and if she's trying to convince him that she's mad at him, she's doing a terrible job of it.
Daedalus has always been a very devout follower. He deserves a few good ideas.
He's had enough ideas, she says, because without his help, the queen wouldn't have found a way to consummate her love of the bull. I don't think he needs any more.
Maybe,
Hephaestus murmurs, dragging his nose up her temple.
But imagine this, a labyrinth, bigger than any other, than this whole volcano.
That's nice, dear, Aphrodite says, and then proves to be distracting enough that Hephaestus puts his ideas aside. At least for a little while.